Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a New Day radio show where the dialogue is authentic, host is passionate, and we help you to become empowered, inspired, resilient, and transformed. Yes, our focus is to change our world by transforming one business and one life at a time. Now, here is your host, author, columnist, reinvention coach, entrepreneur, teacher, and speaker, Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson.
Well, happy Labor Day. I nearly said Memorial Day. Happy Labor Day to everyone who is listening, and happy Sunday to you. It's always an exciting time when I get to be on the air live with you. I have two amazing guests that is lined up for this Labor Day show. So in a minute, I have one of my guests hanging on in the virtual green room. And in a moment, I'll introduce you to my first guest. In the meantime, let's just listen to our theme song.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I want to be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand.
All right. So, as always, I encourage you to call in and be part of the conversation. The chat room is open, it's up and running. The number to call in is 646-915-8166. 646-915-8166. And today's show is brought to you by Ignite the New You in Paradise Retreat. Ignite the New You in Paradise Retreat. Okay, I am not sure why we are not hearing the voice over. I guess we will need to fix. There are some voiceovers that's supposed to be playing and getting them played. So we will have to get that. However, Ignite the New You in Paradise Retreat.com is the website. And I encourage you to stop by there, explore what's going to be taking place in Jamaica. And if you have any questions there, you are welcome to call me at 203-794-6208. And my first guest is local here in Danbury. My first guest is John Landers. And John has over 25 years experience in marketing, along with his graphic design skills. John first became the national sales manager for a British manufacturing in the DIY, do-it-yourself trade, to help them get established in the North American market, followed by doing the same for a German horticultural company. He then got involved with a rep agency that supplied the Home Depot as well as other big box stores of retail chains with over 40 different product lines servicing the area from Maine to Virginia with over 100 service reps. However, John has a unique story. And as you all know, the Sunday episode of the A New Day show always deals with adversities, overcoming adversities, and helping people to understand that don't matter what you have encountered in your life, you can turn it around. A lot of times, our adversities is this key thing that points us to the direction that we ought to go. So without any further delay, I want to welcome my guest, Mr. John Landers. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm tip-top. Thank you, Daphne. How are you?
I am wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking time out from your family. I know that it's holiday and it's long weekend, so thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
My pleasure. Always glad to be here.
Wonderful. I read your bio for the people, and things are easy going right now, to put it mildly. But there was one time in your life where things was not always that smooth sailing. In school, you had some struggles and some challenges and was even labeled. And you wasn't sure what some of the hindrances were until you became an adult and stumbled on an old report card. So I want you to briefly introduce yourself to the people, and then we want to go into that story, because I know that there are people out there who are probably faced with the same obstacle that you were faced with.
Yeah, well, back in high school, I went to a unique high school back in the day. It wasn't your typical public school, but it was unique in its sense, an eclectic group of people. And our report cards were more than just a letter or a number. It was actually a written-out report based on your, development. What I did not know was that my parents decided to keep from me one of the learning disabilities I had back then, without my even knowledge, my own knowledge of it. I only learned about it back when I became almost 50 years old. I happened to come across the old report card, and basically it said that I had trouble retaining whatever I read, and I always struggled through high school and college, and now at that point I understood it, but I did manage to compensate for that in ways of that I can't remember how, but I just had to work that much harder to get to some place that other most people wouldn't have to work as hard about.
And one of the things that you discovered during these times when you were really putting your effort forward and to make sure you did not fall through the cracks, and that you excel what you do. You, for want of a better word, you stumbled on a career, if you may. that had nothing to do with what you were doing for 25 years. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, I mean, I worked very hard at what I did, but I was also very, I try to stay as focused on what I did in terms of marketing and sales. You know, I did help, like you mentioned, a couple of companies get established here in the U.S. market. And as a manufacturer's rep, we worked very hard in not only just selling to big box stores, but also training the associates working in the stores on the products we sold them. And that was a challenge for me, too, because I had to memorize it. Well, I couldn't really. I the more I did things by doing it, the better I was able to remember what I had to do it, so to speak. So I'm more of a visual person than, you know, reading a whole bunch of text. And,
right.
That was the way I learned to compensate for my, you know, disability.
So when did the music aspect of John Launders came about?
Funny enough, I was actually a drummer back in the 60s. And I guess for anyone that wants to know me, I'm 67 today. But I'm 67, and I'm a young 67, as you can tell. But in any case, I self-taught myself how to play drums back then. As life happens, I lost track of that, and then I moved on to other things. So in 1999, I was going through a divorce from a 29-year marriage. And in a three-year period following that, my mom was diagnosed with colon cancer. My dad tried to commit suicide as a result of my mom. And my brother was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So I had a lot on my plate. And if it wasn't for the fact of walking into a Circuit City back then, looking at a Yamaha keyboard and hitting the demo keys, which played the theme songs to the James Bond movies, which I was a big fan of, I decided and mess around with it. So, I never took lessons. I don't read music. I just bought the keyboard. I took it home. I labeled the keys, and I started to use some of the built-in loops and stuff with some of the styles and started to, create my own music and lyrics. And at the same time, I joined the Connecticut Songwriters Association, where I met a very dear friend of mine today, Bobby Tamaro from Funky Boy Music and his wife, Layla. She's also a singer-songwriter in her own right, and we became very, very good friends. And he used to do this thing, which was very unique. It was called Producer's Playground. He'd invite two or three of us back to a studio for an evening. We'd bring a copy of a song and a verse, ask us, you know, what style or genre do you see this being written in and composed in, and what type of artist do you see it being sung by? And he would take that and make it sound exactly to that genre and artist. The guy was he's very talented. He's a smooth jazz artist in his own right as well. But he created some really great stuff. So I actually invested first time around to have him produce one of my songs, Good Friends, with his wife Layla doing the vocals. And I originally wrote it as something I would envision it as in a Sesame Street kind of a series for children. Mm-hmm. But he turned it around and turned it into a love ballad with Layla. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away. I never occurred to me it could sound that way. And I was so impressed with that. I actually sent Layla, because I was so grateful for that, for the finished product. I sent her a bouquet of flowers with a teddy bear, thanking them
beautiful.
So dearly that they did that. And they never got that from any of their clients, you know, that they produced for in the past. You know? I've always learned to always show appreciation is due, and so that turned it into a really good friendship. And ever since, he's actually produced the other nine or seven tracks of my eight tracks, actually, of that music. I was just saying, the process,
go ahead.
I remarried in 06, and I wrote my vows into a song, which was our first dance at the wedding. So that was how it all developed.
I have to apologize to the listeners, because I listened to this song on Facebook. And I tried to download it because I wanted to upload it here so I could play it for the listeners. And I wasn't able to do that. But before we end the conversation, I want you to tell them where they can go and listen to the song or by the song. I have to tell you, John, that's a beautiful wedding song.
Yep, and you know, there wasn't a dry eye in the place for our wedding for that song, with Dan.
Mm-hmm.
It's also something I hope to get Josh Groban to record one day, because it's his genre. But that's on the sidelines, because it was my intention then to start to pay it forward by doing the showcases I started back in 2013 in January.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that. Talk about what showcase is and what it means and how many lives you have touched and what do you have in store for it coming up.
Well, I mean, I have a vision. It was starting off as just a monthly music showcase. I mean, there's a lot more to it that will develop, but you have to start somewhere. So back in 2013 in January, after 2 years of what I call research and development, and that included joining over 36 meetup groups, the different chamber of commerces in Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey, and I was averaging 3 to 4 networking events a week just to build my database, and that was 2 years of that. Then I had to look for the right venue, and I through my network, and I found the Gibson Guitar Studios on the west side of Midtown Manhattan, next to the Hit Factory. They loved what I was trying to plan, so they provided the space, which I actually, you know, rented out. It was out of my own pocket. I was going to start actually in December of 2012, but I learned a lesson the hard way. I had my first artist, Tatiana Owens, come to perform. And on the very day of the showcase, she was hospitalized with a major illness. And I was supposed to cancel the whole thing. I thought, well, that's not going to happen again. So I decided to have two artists. So at least if one couldn't make it, at least I have two. So that worked out very well. Tatiana actually got to come back in January along with the Spanish channel. And that was our first showcase. And it went very well. And then I met at the time who was my partner for the past year, 2 years, Brian Giacoma from Talent Army Music. And we started to collaborate. He loved the idea of what I was doing, and it helped with his Talent Army Music as well. That's a whole separate thing. But we decided to up it to three artists. Eventually, today, we're up to six artists every month, where they do a 20-minute live set or four songs. But it's not just a showcase. We also invite music, entertainment, TV, and film industry executives and A&Rs to connect with. So that was the first part of this whole program. But it was my intention to brand it in New York, which, you know, we started to call it the Big Apple Indie Music Series, or TBAMES for short, which was the first letter of each word, with the idea that like South by Southwest, we could expand this and go in other cities. Once we branded it, it's my intention to replicate these on every music showcase in North America, and also globally, because I see us as a global platform for music independent artists to connect with. And that's just a part of it. We also collaborate with music festivals around the country. We're working with the Mid-Atlantic Music Festival in North Carolina, Launch Music Festival in Lancaster, PA, Landmark Events out of Toronto, Montreal. And as we grow this thing, we want to expand that. And it's all about, and here's where the key word is collaboration. You know,
exactly.
Quite a few who I've connected with, they think I'm competition. And I try to explain to them, look, we're all here in the same boat. You know, we're trying to support independent
uniqueness.
Work together,
yeah,
and let's build this thing. Everyone thinks they have to do it themselves, and it's just the wrong mindset.
And that's why our people will not grow and will not progress, because people are still off the crabbing that has the crab in the barrel mentality. And people need to understand, John, that when you operate in your uniqueness and your calling, there's no competition. Your own competition is your last performance. So
let me say this, that I've had already a couple of people try to copy me, but they both failed in big ways.
Exactly, because they can't be you. They can't be you. And people have to understand, nobody can can't do you like you do you. So instead of using your energy to be worried about what somebody else is going to do, just keep giving your dream all of the energy you have, because nobody can do you. They can try to copy you. They can spend millions of dollars, and they still won't be able to be you. It doesn't matter. They can use your color. They can use your logo. They cannot be you. And, you know, this is just like cooking. How many times you have a dish and you ask somebody, oh, this is so good, can I have the recipe? And they give you the recipe, John. And you do everything on that recipe. And it, when you taste it, it never comes out like the one you tasted.
Oh,
because,
that's true.
Exactly.
I'll say that. Because I've tried recipes and tried to copy, and I'm terrible at it.
Exactly. Because you know what? That person that made that dish you tasted, their personality was in it. They did it with love. And nothing was wrong with the one you did, because your personality was in that one, but your taste bud was already captured by what you tasted for the other person. And it's the same thing as small business people and entrepreneurs. This is what happened to us. We got to collaborate. We in a global world now. We can no longer continue to do business as if we just have our local area code and zip code. We got to learn the word collaboration. How do you select or invite the musicians that participate?
Well, that was a learning process for me, being new to the industry. Initially, I would listen to a studio recording and like something, and then bring the artist in, and that was a mistake, because a lot of times they use auto-tune, which I now don't accept. They sound great on a recording, but they sing live and they're so pitchy and just, and not just that, but we now look at a lot of different things. We look at stage presence. We look at how well they engage the audience. Obviously, to sing on key, be able to sing on key without auto-tune, content is very important to us too, because, there's so much negativity in the world today. I'm looking for content that has a positive message, does not have to use profanity, does not have to defend or promote violence. It's just not going to be in our showcases anymore. I want a positive message out there, something that's memorable to listen to and easy on the ears. I kind of joke about heavy metal, and I don't mean to be disrespectful of the that genre.
Artist,
To me, heavy metal is just simply a woman in labor with a band. I at my age, I don't get it. Everyone can scream and yell and play some instruments. It's not pleasant for me to listen to. So I don't accept any heavy metal in our showcases. There are plenty of other venues and places that will take it, but not through T-Bames. Will go for a certain rap and hip hop. If you're going to use a lot of profanity and bad words and just promoting any kind of violence, it's not going to go through us. That's for sure. I know these artists have something to say, and they're maybe mad. They're really mad, frustrated, but do it in a nice way, and you'll get more people to listen. That's just my view.
And with all due respect, there is somebody out there that likes that. But you know what you will, everyone who steps on is part of your brand. So you have the right to select the artist that you are. And I know that you there and
Daphne, I think you're breaking up. I'm not sure.
All of that stuff. So it's amazing. It's amazing. I want to remind you to call in 646-9158. 8:1, and you're listening to John Landers and myself. What that musician now?
Daphne, you're breaking up. I'm not hearing any. Every other word is breaking up. I don't hear it too well.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Can you hear me now?
No, I'm still getting broken up, at least on my end.
Okay.
Let me try. I don't know
all
if
right.
it's me or...
I guess I just have to keep in until here. Is it any better?
That's a little real. Say again?
Is that any better?
Oh, you're breaking up again. Let me try a different location. Maybe I don't know if it's my connection.
I think I know what's happening. All right. So, just saying I'm breaking up what the reason is. Are you hearing me any better, John?
Oh, that's better. Now I got you.
Are you hearing me now?
Oh, you were good for a minute. Now you're breaking up again. Sorry, everyone.
Stay with me any place. Are you hearing me any better?
Yeah, you're breaking up again. I have four bars.
Okay. I'm not sure what that is about.
If it might help.
Are you hearing
me
any better?
Try again. Give me a question and I'll try to answer.
I was saying, what advice do you have to give to that young person that has a love for music, but they're looking and saying, oh boy, they don't think they're going to make any of it because they have to be like the other hip hop person and all of that. What would you tell them?
Well, I would advise them to look inside themselves real hard, try to turn that anger into something less angry, convert it to something where you can express yourself. You know, you're upset about something, but do it in a nicer way. You know, and as far as the music industry today, you gotta stay focused on performing as many different venues as you possibly can to get your name out there, learn social media.
Exposure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exposure is very key. Don't expect, don't think because you're a songwriter that, it's given to me. Now I can be famous. It's not going to happen that fast. The other thing I suggest is that you need to be coachable in terms of wanting to learn all the different aspects of the industry.
Take the advice that's
given to you because you may think you know it all, but I don't even know it all, and I'm learning every day.
Nobody
so
knows
that's,
it all. That's a key word you use there. Be coachable because some people just think they know it all, and the person that think they know it all, they might as well just stay locked away in their homes and don't come out because nobody knows it all. Every day we are blessed to see another day. We ought to use that day to learn something new because every day in life is opportunity to learn something.
Absolutely. I learn something every single day, and I keep my mind open for that every time.
That's right. That's right. You go out and you expect to learn something new. I tell people, I live in gratitude every day, and I live in expectation of learning something new every day. Every day, we are all in school, John. Some of us are registered in institutions, and some is just learning from life experiences. But regardless of how you're learning, we are all in school, each and every day. Some of us, we are not learning because we refuse to learn the lesson because, as you say, we're not coachable and we don't slow down in time to learn something, but it's very important.
But let me add this.
Go ahead.
I mean, if you really are passionate about the music that you're doing, Don't let anybody turn you off of it. Stay focused.
Mm-hmm.
Stay true to your belief and wants, and just keep at it, because the longer you keep at it, the more chance you'll be successful at it.
That's right. That's right. I'm going to ask you, John, to give your contact information out to the people and tell them the name of the songs that you have out. I want for you to create a checklist for people, because the examples that you share here, they are good for musicians, but they are also good for anybody else that has a dream and a desire and want to pursue it. Everything
Absolutely.
You have spoke about here is just geared across the board. Whether you're a musician or you're a cook or pastry chef, it does not matter. So, and I want you to create a checklist for people that they can have, and they can use it as a guide to go back to. But before you do that, I would like for you to please tell people how they can get in touch with you, your website, and where they can find your music.
Okay, well, the website is still up at tbames.com. It's T as in Tom, B as in Boy, A-I, M as in Mary, S as in Sam.com. It can also be looked up at TheBigAppleIndieMusicSeries.com. I just two versions. One a little easier to go with. In fact, on the website itself, under the About page, on the very bottom are all my music that you can listen to right there. It's available right on the site. You can also get it through iTunes, CD Baby. I'm on Reverb Nation as well. I'm out there pretty easily. You can find my music. Some of the music is Good Friends, which is the first one I reproduced. This Special Moment, which is the my vows into the my wedding song, that's on there. There's also three instrumentals. One actually was in the top 10 about 4 years ago on the national charts.
Drink some water, John, so you can moisten your throat.
Yeah, it was called Bossa. It's like a Bossa Nova type of thing, instrumental. That was in the top 10 about 4 years ago on the national charts. That's on there. And there's a few other ones which I'm very happy with. It's all there to be listened to. What I would suggest anyone in any industry that you want to get into, do your homework, research the industry itself, look at what who the big players are and what they're doing to become that. Try to learn their history. And try to get out and network as much as possible. That's the key to anything that you want to do in today's society. You need to learn how to network. And I would recommend, I don't get a commission on this, but a great read is Endless Referrals by Bob Burg, B-U-R-G. It's a very simple read, but it taught me a whole lot. Most basic fundamental way to network. And just get out there and... there are good networking events and poor networking events. And here's my take on that. If you're going to go to a networking event for business and it's got a DJ, chances are you're not going to get too much accomplished in that.
Because you can't anything but the music.
Because it drowns you out. The only way you can benefit from that is try to get there at least a half an hour before it starts, where it's still quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Meet as many people as you can in the first half hour or so, and as it gets noisier, move on. Because there's no way you can effectively network with the people in a loud room. I've been very picky about that. I've been to events where 300-400 people go. And I usually go first half hour, an hour or so, and I always try to get there early. I'm able to meet some really key people. It's not how many you meet. It's the quality of who you meet. And always go with an open mind that person may not be the one that you will do necessarily do business with, but you don't know who they know. And that's the key on networking.
Exactly.
Go in with an open mind and try to learn about the person. Get to know the person. Don't try to sell them anything at the first part. You got to try to build a relationship with these people before you can even think about getting any business out of it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people, they don't understand networking. They don't understand that it is building relationships. A lot of people go, I've been to events where people walk up to me and just pushing their card to me. And I'm talking to somebody, and they keep pushing the card, and I ignore them. Because there's no sense in me taking your card if I don't know what you do. Because it's not that everybody that you meet, you will do business to. However, everybody you meet, you should be informed about what they do. So when you do meet somebody else, you can refer them to that person. You know?
Yep.
I remember I was explaining that to a young person at a conference I was at. I said, stop pushing your card at people. Take 5 minutes and learn about what the person does. Tell them about what you do. And then when they fully understand, they are going to say to you, may I have your card, please?
Exactly.
I said, you know. Go ahead, John.
Well, I was going to say, because if you think about it, they won't ask you for a card unless they're interested in what you're doing and who you are.
Exactly.
So why waste giving a card to someone? It's going to, you know where it's going to go? It's going to go right at the garbage.
Exactly. Right in the garbage is where it's going to go. So people need to, you know that when you go out there, you are going to build a relationship.
Yep.
And long-term or short-term, it doesn't matter. So long as a relationship, because once you build that relationship, sometimes you probably don't see the person for a year or two, but they remember you, they remember what you do, they remember what you're about. You will be so surprised on the phone and they said, oh, I remember we met at this place such and such a time, and you're saying, oh my God, I can't believe you remember me and what I do. And that's the difference between pushing a card and creating a relationship.
Yeah,
okay,
I'll
John,
share something on that. Let me share something with you, a good point, because I just connected with somebody. They've been watching my social media for the past 2 years, and they finally approached me and said, you know, we'd like to do something, an event with you guys, and we have a lot of followers, and it's going to happen. It's just going to happen next year. But out of the blue, I didn't expect that, you know, and you just don't know when the person's going to say, you know, this is the time I need to contact.
Yes, because they're watching consistency. It's like it's like people will start a corner store and they are saying, oh, they don't get too much support from the community. However, there are people passing that store every day, and they're watching. They see how long you're going to be there, and they see that you have durability and you are there for a long time. They're going to be coming in, and they remember the hour and the day to the T that you open. But they don't want to start to do business with something that's not going to be there a couple of months down the road.
Exactly.
So people need to take it serious and put, it's like it's an investment. So invest in these relationships that you are creating.
Yep.
Is there anything else you want to share, John, that I didn't ask you about?
I'm trying to think. I'm multitasking, would you mind?
I can hear the banging in the corner, and I'm thinking,
yeah, sorry.
Do I need to go to Danbury to get him?
No, you're okay. We're okay. I'm thinking, I'm getting my mind back on this. I think we've covered just about everything that I can think of. I guess the only thing I would say is whatever you do, try to be the best at what you do. Again, that's part of the research, part of your motivation, and make it your passion, because if it's your passion, it's not really work. And I'm having a ball with what I'm doing. I don't see it work, even though I'm working, I'm probably doing this 24/7, but I get to meet so many talented people, so many people in the industry that I wouldn't have met otherwise. And
exactly.
It's been a great, great ride or journey along the way. So
Beautiful. Well, John, I want to, you can give out your website again. And I just want to say thanks for taking the time to come have a conversation with me. And continue success in everything that you do, my brother.
Appreciate that. Again, it's tbames.com, T as in boy, Tom, B as in boy, A, I, M as in Mary, S as in Sam.com or thebigappleindiemusicseries.com. We're out on all social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, you know, you name it, we're there. It's all under T Bames. And, you know, we are taking a little hiatus right now. I'm reorganizing and regrouping this whole organization. Because I am going to relocate to Tampa, Florida in the next month. And believe it or not, T-BAMES will also now stand for the Tampa Bay Artist Indie Music Series. So we keep T-BAMES, but we're starting to grow. And that's the direction we
want
to go in.
Well, keep in touch. I know there's a platform here. Whenever you have something to share, I am here to accommodate you. So thanks again for everything that you're doing to bring exposure to artists who would normally not have a voice or a platform to be seen on. So again, I want to thank you and enjoy the rest of the long weekend.
Well, same back to you, Daphne, and thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye. So that was John Launders out of Danbury. He mentioned he's relocating. And again, I'm not sure why the voiceovers is not playing. And I am now expecting my other guests to call in. My second guest, let me tell you something about her, and waiting on her to call in. My second guest is Reverend Michelle Hughes, and she is a new transplant to Connecticut. Reverend Hughes is serving as the Associate Conference Minister for Transition in the Connecticut Conference. She offers years of experience in pastoral care, community organization, and nonprofit endeavors. A trained intentional interim, Michelle recently completed her tenure at the First Congregational Church of Lombard in Lombard, Illinois. Michelle also served as the first woman to lead as interim the His Congregational Church of Park Manor. Prior to her interim assignment, Reverend Hughes served Elmhurst College as associate chaplain and as faculty for the Chicago semester. Reverend Hughes has also served as part of the faculty of SUP, the Seminary Consortium for Urban Pastoral Education. In her secular ministry, Reverend Hughes has provided consult services to the Chicago Board of Education, the Illinois Department of Human Services, the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, University of Illinois Hospital, the Children Place Association, and the Chicago Housing Authority. So I am waiting on Reverend Hughes to call in, and we are going to be getting acquainted. We'll just play I Rise until she calls in.
Well, it's about that time again. Can somebody say with me tonight, show me your glory. That's what we want tonight. We want to enter into the glory. As I just said, we're here to praise and we're here to worship God. But we're here to enter into the very presence and the glory of God. We say tonight, great is the Lord. 1 Chronicles 16:25 declare his greatness. For it says, great is the Lord and most worthy of our praise. Psalms 48:1 says, great is the Lord in the city of our God and his holy nation. But one of my favorites is Psalms 99:2 says, great is the Lord. He is exalted above all the nations. And all the nations declare his glory. Oh, if the Brazilians were here tonight, they would say, grande es, Señor. If the Nigerians were here tonight, they would say, Oluwa tobi loba. If the French were here tonight, they would say, grande este la Señor. If the Spanish were here, they would say, grande es a Señor. If Germans were here tonight, they would say, Ich der Lobgrob. If the Italians were here, they would say, grande a io Signore. If the Dutch were here, they would say, Groot is Lord. In every language, in every tongue, in every culture, in every country, it's still the same. Great is the Lord. Great is the Lord. And worthy is his name. Get ready now as Shekinah glory leads us into the glory.
Hello? Pardon me? Is this Michelle? Yeah, it's time to call in 646-915-8166.
Okay. So I am just, I had to make a call, and she's going to be calling right now. So let's just say one voiceover. I'm not sure why these are not playing. So let's see about this one.
AMD Law Group is an international law practice committed to assisting you in realizing your strategic business goals. Led by Ms. Aurelia Mitchell Durant, Senior Managing Partner, AMD Law specializes in international business, international intellectual property, and general internet law. We also support organizations in resolving corporate compliance issues. Addressing the legal needs of technology firms and other businesses serving both domestic and international markets, we are uniquely positioned to assist both startups and long-established organizations. Although AMD seeks to proactively avoid litigation wherever possible, we are fully capable and ready to litigate on your behalf. AMD Law Group, Find us online at amdlawgroup.com or contact us at 347-699-4AMD. That's 347-699-4263. Let us help you pursue and protect your dreams.
All right, and please remember to check out Ignite the New You in Paradise Retreat.com. Ignite the New You in Paradise Retreat.com. And also, would you please like the Facebook fan page with the same name, Ignite the New You in Paradise Retreat. So now we have Reverend Hughes on the phone. Happy Sunday to you, Reverend Hughes. How are you?
I am great. It was a beautiful day today. How are you today?
I am wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I want to remind the listeners you can call in at 646-915-8166, 646-915-8166. And I have to let the listeners know, I have not yet met Reverend Hughes. As a matter of fact, I was introduced to her by my number one cameraman, Mr. Richard Merritt. So I'm hoping Richard is listening and that he will call in to give a warm welcome to Reverend Hughes. And as you heard from my reading her bio, she's new to Connecticut, but she comes with a wealth of knowledge and experience. And that's my reason for having her on the show tonight, because in her life back in Chicago, she worked with a unique, unique population, which we'll hear about. So again, welcome to the A New Day show, Reverend Hughes.
Thank you.
I giggled when we spoke on the phone a couple of days ago. I said, oh, my Lord, you left one cold place to come to another cold place. So I don't know whether Chicago or Connecticut, which is going to get number one. I kind of think it's Chicago. So I hope
they call the hawk. They call the wind in Chicago the hawk.
Oh, my Lord. I've been to Chicago, but not in that time of the year. I've been down there in the summer, so it was all good. So, welcome to this platform. Your first time on my show. Please tell the people a little something about Michelle Hughes.
Well, I am a second career a minister, but when I went to seminary, I was determined I was not going to work in the church, but rather work in the community.
Ah.
So, in fact, that's what I did. I call it the years of my secular ministry, where I worked with young teen moms from the age of 16, well, young moms from the age of 16 to, I think, 23 was the oldest person we have who were HIV infected. And I also worked with the Illinois Department of Human Services with young adults who were aging out of the system. They had been raised by the state. They were ready to be emancipated according to law, but because they had no family to receive them once they were emancipated, they didn't want to be. Because the state was the only family that they had. They agreed to fund a program where we would meet once a month during that time when they would be emancipated. So as they were let go on their own, they would still have a kind of a family in terms of, like a group discussion group. That became their family so that they wouldn't just be thrown out with no ties.
My God, my God, my God. What a blessing to you to step in and other people, because, there's so much happening in our world, and in our country or our state that we are not so familiar with. I mean, people hear about foster care and all of that, and people don't really know to what age these young people are in the system. It is very sad. So again, I honor you for doing that kind of a work. And you mentioned second career. What was your first career?
Well, I've always worked kind of in nonprofits. I am a civil rights baby. I'm a movement baby. Not a baby anymore, but that is what I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
So all of my, I worked for arts groups, neighborhood organizations. I worked for the city of Chicago for a while. So I'm just very much
always advocating.
Advocating, or yes, yes. But when I decided for me, and it's really curious, when I went to seminary, I didn't even belong to a church.
Mm-hmm.
Which
amen.
I did not
amen.
Belong to a church because the people that I were emulating were in the community. They were activists, and the
that's
ministers
right.
that I knew growing up were all activists. In fact,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea what they did on Sunday because I saw them doing community work.
That's the church. You are the church. I am the church. The building is where we go to collaborate for discussion, but we are the church.
Right. Well, that's what was my original idea, only to get inside of the church and find out that for so many people that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
church
true.
Becomes an event,
mm-hmm.
and which doesn't have a lot to do all the time in too many cases of what happens
right.
outside the walls.
Exactly,
and
because
they are
isolated from that.
Yes, yes, and so, but you know what? The thing is, everybody is seeking, and everybody wants to be cared for. And everybody wants to be in community. It is our nature.
Exactly.
We have just
exactly.
disconnected from the people who need it the most. I had, unfortunately, dealing with the population I was, young people, we would have funerals. People would be very young. And there were churches, we would call, that wouldn't let us have
the funeral day.
Right.
They weren't a member.
Right, they weren't a member.
I tell
they
you,
weren't.
Reverend Hughes, I was born and raised in Jamaica, West Indies, and I got a rude awakening when I moved to this country and found out that there were people who lived next door to each other for over 20 years and they did not know their neighbors.
Yes.
They see them outside and they hold their head straight like they don't know them. And I say, how can that be? We are supposed to be our brother's keeper, but that is just gone out through the door. Nobody cares about what's happening in the community now. There are a lot of cliques that's going on. And I remember I was taking part in a healing school at a non-denominational center. And I was sharing with somebody from the church I was worshiping at the time that I was going to that, and she asked me. So my eyes popped open. I said, huh? And she repeated, did Pastor so-and-so approved it? I said, what do you mean? She said, oh, but he's your leader. You shouldn't be going to anything that he has not approved. I said, girl, I got a higher approval. She said, what I mean? I said, God approved me. I said, God approved me, girl. I look and I said, my God, these people are, with no disrespect, a lot of people are brainwashed, Reverend Hughes, because they're not thinking for themselves anymore. They cannot go out in the community and break bread with the people who are hurting because they see themselves above those people.
Yes, sadly, and it's always been like that. And I grew up in a time that I tell people I've lived long enough to see. When I grew up, it was to be young, gifted, and black, right? That was the song. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And, you know, the natural hair and all that. And I said, I've lived long enough to see that almost be washed away.
Exactly. Exactly.
And,
exactly.
But I thank God for people like you that have public form, because it is up to us.
Exactly, to take a stand. Exactly.
Yes,
and I tell people, I do this work unapologetically. I'm not going to apologize for what God has called me to do. Tell somebody, if I've never set foot into a building again to worship, I know I have the biggest congregation outside there, because I'm doing what God wants me to do. I'm not approved by man, but I'm approved by God. And I'm speaking His truth.
You are.
I'm not
well,
here to judge anybody.
We're all called to do. We're all called to use what we have to make the world better.
Yes, yes.
We are all.
Yes.
We all have a calling on our life.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it used to be a time in school they talked about that was vocation. Vocation is not
mm-hmm.
a job. It's like, what is your life's calling? What is going to be your life's
That's
work?
Right.
What are you contributing to the planet? And
that's it.
And I think people's vocations were very well respected, because people saw that is your gift that you're giving.
Exactly. And you give it unselfishly. You know, unselfishly. 2 days ago, I was on one of my followers on Facebook. I was on his page, and I saw a YouTube video there. It's titled, I Am Mark, M-A-R-K. And it's this young man. He was out on the street, and he gave money to a homeless man. And they got into a little conversation, and the man asked him if he have a minute, if he could sit a little bit. And he said, yeah, I can sit a little. And they began in a conversation. And in the middle of the dialogue, the homeless man said to him, the homeless man's name is Mark. And Mark said to the guy, because the young man had just gave him money, okay? He
okay.
said... In the middle of the dialogue, Mark said to him, can you wait a minute? Don't go any place. Just wait right here. I'll be right back. Don't go any place. So he said, okay, all right. I ain't got nothing to do. I'll wait until you come back. So he waited and waited and waited and waited. Then Mark returned. The money that he gave Mark went to a restaurant and bought 2 meals. One for him and one for the guy who gave him the money.
Oh,
and the guy looked
heart.
At him. The guy looked at him and said, Mark, you didn't have to do this. This money was for you. He said, no, I'm sharing with you. You know how many people have passed me here day in and day out, have never said a word to me? Sometimes they give me something. Here you are. Sitting with me, keep me company, and listening to what I got to say. And I tell you, I got mushy. Tears ran on my face. Because too many people are looking at people who are homeless and think they are nobody.
Yeah.
You know? And that man needed the company more than he needed the food. And
yeah.
he went and he spent that money with the man who will keep his company. And you and I and everybody else who is listening to this episode, they can do the same thing. They don't have to give money. It's a word of encouragement. I see another young man who is a barber in New York City. On his days off, he take his bag, he take his cape, and he go out with one of those black plastic crate that they have milk in. That's his barbecue. And he goes out, Reverend Hughes, and he gives cut and a shave to the homeless.
Oh, how see, that's his look. He's using his gift.
Exactly. Exactly. And I said, these young people are now making a difference. A lot of these young people, probably since they stopped going to Sunday school with their parents, they have not set foot in a church. But they are doing some amazing, amazing work to make a difference in our society.
That story. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying I want to talk to you more, and I want for you to share more about the young mothers who were HIV positive. I want you to share about that experience and any insight you can give to the young people who might be listening to this episode.
Okay. Well, one of the things people were surprised to find out that 90% of the young women who were in our program, that person who infected them had been their first sexual encounter because they were very young girls.
Yes.
And the other group we had was immigrants who were married very young.
Mm.
And their husband might have come first, and then the husband sends for them. And I had two young women who had children. Husband died, and husband did not tell him until he was dying that he had AIDS.
Oh, dear God.
And so the idea that people have that everybody is promiscuous, no, some of these
not
girls,
true.
They're young, they're naive.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of the stigma,
yes.
The challenge was to get them to take their meds because with the blessing of technology and medicine, it is a manageable chronic illness. But you have to take your meds. And we had girls who would not because they were so afraid somebody would see them taking pills and that they would, you know, be shunned or embarrassed that they would just not take it. So that was, two things were very eye-opening. The other thing, the only way we could get them to come in is when they were pregnant because
yes.
If we told them this will help your baby, they would come. But once they had, and now, as you know, the statistics are wonderful, the chances of you having a non-infected baby because you take the meds. But once the baby was born and the baby was fine, they would go back into hiding. They would not. And they were just so inexperienced, and unfortunately, in a very economically depressed community, it was not uncommon to have three or four girls that were affected by the same guy.
Isn't that something?
And pregnant by the same. So it was becoming so common that we would have to screen if they came from a neighborhood, because a lot of times it was happening in, you know, it would be a neighborhood, and it might be two or three guys that were, you know, having sex with several young girls, not telling them, not using protection.
Wow.
And like I said, because of the stigma, they would not tell. But can you imagine being 16? And, you know, your first love, and you think this boy loves you, only to find out.
That it's a dead sentence given you.
Only to find out. And so I really, my heart went out to these young girls because they didn't tell anybody because, well, everybody's going to think I was sleeping around or people are going to think I'm using.
Drugs.
And then the other population the other population that we had was that are now, they're now in their 20s, but 20 years ago, 25 years ago when the AIDS epidemic hit and they didn't have the meds now, people were dying. So a lot of
that
were in the system raised by the state because they had lost their parents. Or
parents, wow.
Foster. But the problem was the foster care people, while they cared for them all the time, didn't even tell the kids that they had this. They would tell them, you know, you just have to take extra vitamins, or, you know, they would make up a story to get them to take their meds. But then,
your
because
meds.
Back then,
instead
they didn't think they were going to live.
Them. Wow. I said, wow. Instead of educating them, you know?
And
wow.
So the horror, can you imagine? You think you've been taking these vitamins, or they tell you, oh, you might have asthma. You're a kid, you don't know, and then you get 16 or 17, and you find
no,
out.
No, you are hearing that. Wow.
And so
oh
the
God.
Other part of what we had to do was try to talk to family members and adoptive parents to tell them it's a hard truth, but that it's so cruel to do that. You need to tell them in
exactly.
a way they can understand as they're growing up. It's a sense of betrayal.
Yeah, they will not. They don't trust anybody after that, because they think everybody's going to deceive them. Wow. Wow. It is so,
so
challenging. I was saying it's very challenging now being a teenager, you know. I know when we were growing up, we had our issues, but it was not as challenging as it is right now.
No, it's just bad. And so as other people have said, we love to say as a country that we love children. We do not love them.
No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
We do not.
You and I
care
think the same way. Nope.
Yeah,
across the country, and you look, and a lot of the agencies and everything that is supposed to have services for children, and for young people, they are just using them as numbers to pull the funds in, but they're not giving them the services that they are supposed to get and the care that they're supposed to get. They are not doing it.
And the
they're
ones that are like the programs I work for who were doing it, they cut our funding.
Exactly.
So when
exactly.
we have a program and we had more and more people coming on board. Oh, let me tell you one other thing I found out. One of the most, I did this with this group of girls for 3 years. And at the end of the 3 years, I asked them, if I would do this again, what's the best class we ever had?
Mm.
And they all said the same thing. I had a brother that I met that was in the Nation of Islam. And you know how college
mean.
I met him and I asked him, would you do me a favor? I want you to come to my class and meet my girls. And I want you to talk to them. First of all, the men that approach them, they are not clean cut and, you know, well groomed. And he was a young guy and very, very handsome. I said, I want you to come and I want you to talk to them as a man about what type of woman you would be attracted to. And he did. And he was brutally honest. And they told me they remembered that because they had not been fathered.
Yes, yes.
They had not been
so
fathered.
It's the
so
first mandate.
Oh,
my God.
To have a man come that's not trying to hit on them or not.
And
you
to
know,
be telling them the truth.
And told them, and he told them how beautiful they were, but then he went around the room one by one and commented on how they dressed. How they walk.
Beautiful.
As a man, when
beautiful.
I see you, I see this is what I see. And he
my
was
God.
Like, I will take you to dinner, but he said, I would never take you to my house. Or,
wow.
You know, I'll take you to bed, but I never take you to meet my mother. And this is why. And this is why.
Wow. So now they are hearing it from
that.
Somebody.
Huh?
Wow. I said, now they had the opportunity of hearing the honest truth from somebody. That they did not have to compromise themselves to hearing that.
Right. Right.
Wow.
They remembered
that
him.
That is powerful.
And some of them changed the next week. They even started dressing differently. I mean,
yeah, because
really,
they understand what being a lady is like.
Right.
Wow. And that's something, you know, they will never forget that. They are not going to get that, and they are going to be able to tell their other friends,
yes,
what that young man said to them.
Yes, he just I told him, I said, I want you to be looking good and smelling good.
I can't, I'm going to like you already, and I haven't even met you yet. You are too funny. Listen, so let us switch gears. So let's talk about what you now do,
okay,
and what has brought you to the state of the nutmeg state.
To the nutmeg state. Well, I had been working as was kind of 1 foot in the church and 1 foot in doing community work. And a few years ago, a friend of mine told me about this new a specialized ministry called Intentional Interim Ministry, which most all mainline churches, the Presbyterians, Episcopalian, and most of the mainline, Methodist, United Church of Christ, which I am, employ. So if you lose your pastor for any reason, you have the option of asking for a transitional minister to come in who specializes and how to move the congregation through their grief and help them look for another permanent leader. It's called transition because you don't come to stay. You come to help them through this wilderness.
Out of the rut.
Right. So my friend of mine who was Lutheran had told me about this and said, encourage me to take the training. I did, and that was the work I was doing. But it's still, a lot of people don't really understand it. It's a very particular type of work to do.
It's a specialty work, yeah.
Yeah, it's a specialization. You go through after you have a master's in divinity, then that's the additional training to get this specialized training.
Okay.
And I'm United Church of Christ and the state of Connecticut. In just our denomination, we have over 50 people that are qualified to do this work.
Really?
But I came here.
Wow.
Yeah, I came here because the United Church of Christ in the state of Connecticut created a new position for someone to be on the state level to help all the churches in transition. To figure
and
out
it ways. It doesn't matter what denomination.
Yes. It's for the United Church of Christ are mostly in New England, the Congregationalists. When you see First Congregational, I would say the vast majority of the Congregationalists in New England are UCC, our United Church of Christ. That's the denomination.
I didn't know First Congregational what they fell under. So now I know.
Yes. So the story of the Amistad. Sent to the African who turned the slave ship around, thought he was trying to turn around and go back to Africa and ended up on the shores of New York, right? And the story, if you've read the book or seen the movie, that when he landed, the abolitionists in New England fought for his defense and freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Those abolitionists hired John Quincy Adams, who later became president, to be his lawyer. Those abolitionists who saved him were the Congregationalists.
Uh-huh.
So that's why so it really kind of started here.
So
that's why we have so many Congregationalist church here, and we claim that as part of our story.
I didn't realize New England had more Congregationalists than any place else. Wow.
Yes, that's why. Mm-hmm. And the other reason is
this is God's place.
The other reason is in this state, it's my understanding that you could not found a town unless you had a church first. So if you notice a lot of towns downtown, it's a church, a cemetery, and like a meeting house, because that's what made you an official town.
Wow.
So you
amazing,
have both of those.
Amazing.
You have the history, and then you have that political system, which in the 1600s and 1700s, you couldn't have a town, because that was their confirmation that this was indeed a community. You had a group of people that were worshiping, you know, together and coming mm-hmm. together in community, and the church was the evidence of that. So even though Connecticut is such a small state, I believe we have 236 churches in this one state.
Congregational churches?
Yes.
Are all the churches combined?
No, just congregational.
Wow.
That's not counting Methodist, Baptist. That's not counting all the other churches. Just
you are right, you know, because I'm thinking around here. And you're so right, because every town right around here, Sherman, New Fairfield, New Milford, Danbury, Bell, all have First Congregational Church. You
right.
are so right. Roxbury, oh my heavens. I did
yes.
not know that. Wow.
That's why.
Wow. I am telling you, wow, wow. We have a few minutes remaining. I want to tell people, now that you all hear Reverend Hughes just touch on the history of the First Congregational Church, if you have any questions, you can call 646-915-8166, 646-915-8166. And while we're waiting on the phone to ring, or we are waiting to close out this episode, I want to remind people to go to ignitethenewyouinparadise.com, ignitethenewyouinparadise.com, and check it out. Is there anything else you want to talk about that I didn't ask you?
I want to say one of the reasons that the United Church of Christ is not, it is not a black denomination. It is a majority church. But that is why you will see at so-called, white or majority churches, you will see some of them will have a Black Lives Matter posters, because we claim that kind of advocacy, going back to the Amistad as who we are.
Yes, yes. That's a rich history.
Which is that's very, very interesting.
Yes, yes. Wow.
And in fact, our office, which is in Hartford on Sherman Street, the building, we have out on the outside of the building, we have a poster that says Black Lives Matter, so that's the connection.
Mm-hmm.
That's the connection, because of the stance on justice issues, they see as part of their heritage, who they are.
Heritage. Oh,
not
beautiful.
Now,
beautiful.
Everybody is not, you know, we're all at different levels of agreement on that, but we do claim that as part of our story.
Yeah, it is part of the history, and nobody can protest that. The history is what it is. Well, I'm really looking forward to meet you in person. I think we're going to be liking each other. So I want to thank you for coming on at such short notice. And I want to invite people to come on back here on Wednesday. I have two of you guys. I have, we're going to be talking about PR, public relations for entrepreneurs. Plus, I have my friend Michael Koch, who is the host of On the Couch with Michael Koch. He's been an entrepreneur for a long time. He's coming on to share his journey. And that is on Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern. So, closing thoughts, Reverend Hughes. Closing thoughts for you, please.
Well, I just thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I am getting used to the being in Connecticut. It's quite different from Chicago. But the history here is so rich.
Yes.
That it's a very exciting place to be.
Yeah, thank you. It's an honor. I got to go tell Richard he did good. He did good.
Yes.
So, and I'm looking.
I said he was very insistent. He wanted us to get together.
Oh, yes. He does good. He does good by me. So, I look forward to seeing you on the 11th on the A New Day TV show. And for those of you who are going to be enjoying this long weekend, I want to remind you, if you drink, don't drive. And enjoy, have some good fun, and I'll see you on Wednesday. Remember that you're all called for a purpose, and do not let anything or anyone derail you off your path.
Call it destiny. Will you let me know? What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Grab it in your spirit and say this.
thank you for showing me, and directing me, hallelujah, to my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord, thank you for showing me, hallelujah, and directing me. Speak to it, my destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with his name. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with his name. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's death. Then I know what I'm.